KYW News Radio original podcasts.
This is the rundown for Thursday, May 6th, 2021. In the midst of a gun violence crisis, Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner and his challenger Carlos Vega met last night to debate who should lead the office forward. Now today, the two KYW reporters who asked the candidates questions will break down what happened and why it matters right here on the rundown.
I wouldn't characterize it as threatening. It was more taunting.
So it's not just about gun violence. It's also about, is the progressive movement actually a thing that is going to leave us in safety? That is what I think was at trial here.
It's called the rundown.
This is an issue that is not solved, has gotten worse, affecting our city in so many ways. We all decided this was the most important issue we had to tackle first.
From KYW News Radio.
This is The Rundown. I'm J. Scott Smith, and we are joined today first by Cherry Gregg, the community affairs reporter at KYW News Radio. Cherry, great to have you back with us again.
What up, Jay?
What's happening? And we'd like to welcome for the first time KYW News Radio's crime and justice reporter, Kristen Johansson. Kristen, it's great to have you on The Rundown with us today.
Hello to everyone.
Greetings. Now, Cherry and Kristen, you were both on the panel asking questions last night. Now, I don't know how it felt from up there, but watching in my living room, there was some heat in the room. It was pretty intense. It was pretty contentious. Carlos Vega told District Attorney Larry Krasner that he has blood on his hands within the first 60 seconds of this thing. Krasner repeatedly called Carlos Vega a liar, including once using the phrase lasagna of lies. He actually used it multiple times. They kept sniping back and forth at each other after the debate was over. I got the impression, their views on how the office should run aside, that these guys just don't like each other. Kristen, you've covered the district attorney's office for years, both Krasner as well as his predecessors such as Seth Williams. What can you tell us about the backstory between Larry Krasner and Carlos Vega?
They do have quite the backstory. They have tried, from what I understand, a few cases together where I've been told by people that it was pretty intense. It was before my time. Carlos is one of the people that Larry fired within that, I think they called it the Snow Day Massacre within the district attorney's office. Carlos filed a wrongful termination lawsuit. And ever since then, I think it's been pretty tense between the two of them. So this was the first time that they were actually together in the same room talking about these issues. And Cherry and I and Lauren and Jacqueline all got the taste after the debate, which we can talk about later.
Yes, we should also shout out our friends at NBC 10, Lauren Make and Jacqueline London, who were also a part of the television coverage of it last night. And this whole beef between them also comes as the city is facing a gun violence crisis that is shocking and devastating. I've been on air a number of afternoons talking about some of the just the devastating cases where young children are getting killed, teenagers are getting shot. Cherry, you've covered issues in neighborhoods. Kristen, I follow you on Twitter where you will break down like almost like a police blotter of just the shootings, the number of shootings. You unfortunately have to keep track of these sort of things. And both of you asked the candidates how they see the district attorney's role in getting this murder rate down. Cherry, it seems like these are two guys who just see the job differently. Did anything, you know, stick out to you about how they view the role of the district attorney's office, you know, especially with this backdrop of gun violence happening here in the city?
I mean, I kind of, there's two things that are the big issues. It's not just gun violence, but it's also reform. Because, you know, that's why we're in this situation is because mass incarceration was a big problem in the city of Philadelphia. We had people kind of getting locked up and the key thrown away on them. And so people wanted to see change, which is why a defense attorney was elected to be the prosecutor for Philadelphia. But people have also seen a rise in the number of gun violence crimes and gun crimes over the past several years. So the question is whether or not, you know, this progressive movement is working. So it's not just about, you know, gun violence. It's also about, is the progressive movement actually a thing that is going to leave us in safety? And so that is what I think was at trial here. I don't know if we got to the heart of that. We tried, we pushed, because I think that it's a tough question to answer. Gun violence is tough. I mean, Vega cited all kinds of facts and figures that are being fact-checked as we speak. And Krasner did the exact same thing. But at the end of the day, 499 people were murdered in Philadelphia last year. Well over 2,000 1,000 shootings last year, an issue we brought up, 85% of the victims were Black male. What are we doing? Black mothers are crying every single day because their kids are getting shot. And yet still you do see the conviction rate going down. And so I think, you know, the whole point is, you know, Krasner, are you doing enough? I mean, he seemed to say, to think that he was, he seemed to think that it's not his fault and pointed to other people. Of course, Vega is saying that Krasner didn't know what he was doing. But at the same time, I didn't necessarily hear from either candidate any real solutions other than, you know, pointing fingers. But it's a tough issue, Jay, and they're dealing with it. And there is a lot of animosity, piggybacking on what Kristen said, because, you know, this is a tough, it's like reform on one side, safety on one side. How do you balance the two? That is, to me, the big question of this whole entire election.
I mean, Cherry and I talk about this almost daily, right, Cher? Like we talk about like how to deal with this because it bothers the entire city. But when we got in on these planning meetings with Lauren, Jacqueline, and then we have to also shout out Alex Silverman, our boss, and Kathy Perot from NBC10. We had so many calls about it, hours and hours of this. And the first thing we decided to ask about was each one of us was going to ask about gun violence in a different way. And we actually came up with the questions, I want to say kind of before we came up who was asking the questions. I mean, in some cases, I think they were going with the conviction rate because I'm just generally in crime and courts, and Cherry covers criminal justice reform inside and out. And so those were kind of natural for us to do, but we really developed all the questions together. You know, what is the thing that we want to get at? And that's why we felt that the first three questions had to be about gun violence, because this is an issue that is not solved, has gotten worse, and is just affecting our city in so many ways, besides just the children dying. I mean, which is just alone unbearable for the city. But, you know, on top of that, and the murder rate, but it affects everybody. It's not when you have somebody who dies of gun violence, right? We had Rob Green, who was one of the people that asked the questions. It doesn't just affect, you know, Ramon and Rob Green. It affects all of Ramon's, his brothers, his friends, their trauma. It affects the entire community. Everybody, you know, that Rob works with, everybody that Rob knows, everybody is affected by that gun violence, not just that person. I mean, they're the most affected, but it's just the entire city, and it's the ripple effect from that. And so that's why the three of us, you know, well, and Jacqueline and the bosses, we all decided this was the most important issue we had to tackle first.
I like that you bring up the names of people, because quite often when you see just the countless numbers of 2,000 shootings or 500 people killed, a lot of times it just turns into numbers. Putting a name to it, like Rob Green, we're talking about kids dying, people getting lost out here. And it comes back to what they were talking about, both Vega and Krasner, that Vega alleged that there are no consequences for gun violence. Well, Krasner says he's wrong and brought up the 85% conviction rate. And in the shooting cases, Kristen, you asked them the important question. What are you going to do to make sure gun offenders are being held accountable? What did you think of what they had to say about that?
I mean, Lauren Make asked that very first question, and that's when Larry Krasner brought up the 85% conviction rate. And Lauren then, you know, pressed him on it. Well, doesn't that include plea deals? And he said it does include plea deals. So like a conviction at the end of that is a plea deal. So it's not a jury trial or trial and a bench trial. But I mean, truthfully, I didn't really hear answers, and I was trying to press them for answers. You know, Cherry said that too. It was like, there's a lot of numbers that will spew out. And again, we're spending the next day or two trying to fact check everything with all these numbers. But Larry has said that he is holding people accountable. But I truthfully had a list of people that have been, there's the guy, you know, from the Franklin Mills Mall shooting. He had two different gun possession cases within the last year or so, and you know, he was out. I don't know if that's only on Larry Krasner and the district attorney's office. You know, I think we also do have to look at the courts and see what's happening there. And then we have to, but that's also involves like pulling transcripts. So I don't think we're going to get to the heart of the matter, but it's trying to get them to be held accountable for whatever their role is in dealing with gun offenders and the violence that's happening out there.
It sounds like you can't really take a macro level look at a micro level issue. There's a lot of things here. So much minutia that goes into this sort of thing. And the district attorney, he talked a lot about wrongful convictions as well. And he says his office successfully exonerated 20 people and he's brought up the case of Anthony Wright. He brought it up in his opening statement, and it was kind of a way to contrast himself with Vega. Cherry, for people who don't know about that case, what is the case of Anthony Wright, and why was Krasner using it to kind of tie it around Carlos Vega?
Yeah, well, the case of Anthony Wright was convicted in the 90s of murder and rape of a 70 plus year old woman named Louise Talley. DNA evidence cleared him several years ago of that rape. The DNA evidence identified another gentleman who lived down the street as the culprit. But when that evidence came out, the DA's office under Seth Williams decided to retry Anthony Wright just the same. Carlos Vega was part of that prosecutorial team that retried Anthony Wright. And of course, the jury acquitted Wright in about an hour or so. I sat in on that trial. And Anthony actually got a chance to sue the city, won a little under $10 million. And part of the windfall that he got was because he was tried not once, but twice, and forced to stay in prison additional years after being exonerated by DNA evidence. Of course, Carlos Vega says that, you know what? He was just a prosecutor. His supervisors made him do it, and he did what he was told. And he actually, during an interview with Lauren Make, said that prosecutors don't have the job. It's not their job to determine whether or not somebody's innocent. Instead, that's the job of the jury, right? So a lot of people in the community who feel like Black and brown folks are wrongfully accused of things, are charged, given excessive charges or excessive sentences, have complained. And I spoke to them. I actually went and talked to several of the men who were exonerated under Larry Krasner. And they all said, look, they don't trust that somebody like a Carlos Vega, who couldn't speak up when he was a prosecutor in the Wright case, which was, you know, it was a lot of evidence, DNA evidence, which is the strongest evidence that you did not do something. When he didn't speak up in that case, they don't know if they can trust him to run a conviction integrity unit, although he has said that he would not just keep the conviction integrity unit as Krasner created or changed it, but he would also expand it. So there's a lot of distrust there, even though Vega pointed out that he had been involved in another exoneration. So, I mean, the issue of wrongful conviction, Jay, is one that is very close to my heart, because I have to tell you this, I did not know when I first started covering criminal justice reform about 7 or 8 years ago that anywhere from 2 to 8% of all convictions are wrongful. And we only hear about the ones where people get a life sentence or on death row. And many times it takes 20 plus years to get exonerated. In the Anthony Wright case, he did 25 years. And several of those, at least three of those years were after DNA evidence exonerated them. So there's a big issue there. And I think, you know, a lot of folks who are wrongfully convicted may have done a robbery situation, did 5 or 6 years and never get their names cleared. So people feel some kind of way about this. And that's the worst case scenario in criminal justice, that the jury, that everybody just gets it wrong. And so that's one of the reasons why a lot of folks on that side of reform prefer Krasner over Vega on that issue.
The issue of trust, the issue of the Black and brown community. A lot of this also ties into another issue that kept coming up, the Fraternal Order of Police, Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police, which Krasner said Vega, quote, is in the pocket of. They do support Carlos Vega. And KYWCL Bureau Chief Pat Loeb just published a story earlier this week about how a lot of Republicans and independents are switching parties to vote in this primary. Law enforcement clearly has a vested interest in this. They clearly are interested in the outcome of this election. Kristen, when you were up there listening to the candidates, what struck you about what each of them said about the relationship between police and prosecutors, and also as it applies to the FOP?
Well, one of the first things, and this came up with Lauren's question on that, because she asked that question, you know, did he seek the endorsement in 2017? He says that he went up there to make a case, kind of to meet and greet. But it's actually been explained to me from sources on both sides. The FOP saw that as him seeking endorsement. The flip side is that Larry Krasner did see it as a meet and greet. We know that Larry Krasner does not get along at all with the FOP. As far as the relationship with police, it's tense. I mean, I don't think that that's a secret in this city. Police officers some of them at least feel like that he is targeting them, that he's looking at them. Some, there have been cases that have been dropped or dismissed by judges against some of these police officers. On the flip side, there's also some cases that haven't been supported in defense of by the FOP, meaning that the FOP is not supporting the case. They're not paying for the lawyers. But there's also, you know, there's also some cases where it's extraordinary, some of the misconduct. You take, I mean, just the Phil Nordo grand jury, it's a really disturbing case that I've been trying to follow, and we don't have that much information about, but it's very disturbing. So this is a time, I mean, it's something that obviously society we've been talking about forever, but I think you do need a really good working relationship as an entity. And I think everybody kind of wants to see everybody calm down and work together to figure out what the problems are in this city. That's just generally what I've gotten from people. If everyone could just kind of get along for a second, figure out how to tackle this problem and move forward with gun violence, we as a city would be in a better position. I don't know if the relationship will get better or not. I know that the commissioner is desperately trying to make that relationship better too, but she's also called him out, not by name, but saying that it's a revolving door with some of these gun cases, that they're taking more guns off the street and that charges are being dropped. So I don't know if that relationship is going to ever be good, but I guess we all in Philadelphia can hope it gets better.
Now, as occasionally will happen, our reporters are hard at work and Cherry Gregg had to step out because she's got some business to take care of this afternoon, but we still have Kristen Johansson here. And Kristen, I know there's no way we can talk about everything that was said, but in the interest of, you know, trying to kind of wrap a bow on this, what else stuck out to you as important, whether it was a question that was asked or an answer that one of the candidates gave? What do you feel really stood out?
One of the questions I would say that I asked, that I still, you can't really get, a hard and fast information on it, so I guess it's going to be perspective or however you want to think of it, is the organization of the office and the prosecutors. I talked to so many former prosecutors, defense attorneys, those who have supported Krasner, those who haven't supported Krasner, those who do support Vega, those who don't like either. And the one thing that's just, I keep hearing over and over, is the inexperience of the prosecutors in the courtroom. And this is why it's so important. You're going up against defense attorneys that have decades and jury trials under their belt. They are very experienced. They can think of every outcome that may happen, case law that they need to argue in front of a judge about a specific piece of evidence, maybe that enters like a trial or whatever the issue may be, right? They have all of that. But they're now butted up against some of these prosecutors who maybe have never even had a jury trial before. They're only maybe in the office for a few months, or maybe they've even had a handful of jury trials. The way it's been explained to me in law, although I am not a lawyer, I sit in court all day before the pandemic all the time. It's basically a debate, right? It's a fight, if you will. And then the judges are the ones that kind of referee that situation. So you want like the best players that you can get for both teams to make for the best outcome, right? And the jury normally is that best outcome. And so I've just heard over and over from a lot of these attorneys, and it's not every single lawyer and not every single prosecutor in there. There are prosecutors in there that are so incredibly hardworking. They're running around all the time. They have like dozens and dozens and dozens of cases, and they're filing as, I mean, they're really, really working hard. But there are some that I've heard over and over and over again from parties on all sides saying that they just walk in and they don't know what they're doing, and judges have to walk them through things, and defense attorneys have to walk them through what to do. And they're the people that are supposed to be representing all of us, right? So like if one of our loved ones dies, you know, and it wasn't an accident, we would want that person to get the justice that they deserve because we loved the victim and we worked with the victim. You want that in a prosecutor, you know, you want that in somebody to be able to fight for you. And so I've heard that they're untrained, and I didn't hear the answer for how either side really would deal with that, you know, bringing in maybe more experienced people, but you want the best people. I mean, even the Defenders Association has defenders that have been there 35 plus years, 40 years, and they have a million jury trials under their belt. Like, it's not just, you know, prosecutors, but we have to, that has to be balanced. And I've heard there's just no, there's training on policy is what I've heard. A lot of training on the policy, like criminal justice reform, what they're going to do, but there's no training for what to do when you get into this situation, that situation. There's no supervisors that can kind of help you get better at something that you're doing. And we all need that. So, but I didn't really hear an answer, I want to say, from either one when I asked that question. How would you attract, train, and retain the prosecutors that you already have? So, you know, let's hope for the best, I guess, for the city of Philadelphia, because it's just, I've also heard there's low morale. I mean, but I heard that there was low morale last time, like with Seth Williams as well.
And Seth Williams, for a slightly different reason, is how we ended up with Larry Krasner in the first place. I would be remiss without asking about how this whole thing went after the cameras and the mics were off. As I mentioned earlier, there was some distinct heat in the room. They do not like each other. And apparently they had a rather testy exchange after the mics came off. And Kristen, you can speak to that since you were standing maybe 15 feet away from the whole thing.
It was a little bit of the crew that was still in the studio, Jacqueline, Lauren, me, and Cherry. And we're hearing this little, like, teeny little conversation between the two of them as we're kind of turning to each other to be like, hey, you know, good job. And because we're all nervous going on. And then we started to hear the heated debate that happened. And our boss, Alex Silverman, did tweet it out. I'll read the tweet that Alex wrote because I think it's the best way to explain it. As Krasner and Vega were removing their mics, the animosity between them grew sharper. I'm your worst nightmare. You made a mistake a long time ago, Vega said. I've been in your head a long time. Krasner replied, sure, Carlos. Vega then said, you have security downstairs? Krasner said, why? Do I need it? Vega said, do you want to give me a ride home? And Krasner said, I think you need a walk, making the room more uncomfortable before Vega said, do you want to shake hands? And then offered to hug it out before Krasner walked out of the studio. As this was happening, you know, I just went over to Cherry and I started to take her mic off. And then she started taking mine because, you know, it's like attached. And because we were just so uncomfortable, and we were thanking them as they, you know, Krasner left first and then Vega left, but we were thinking like thanking them as they left, but we didn't want to get involved in the situation because it was very uncomfortable. I wouldn't characterize it as threatening. It was more taunting, but it was extremely uncomfortable. Women were kind of looking at each other going, what do we do? And then that's when the, you know, managers walked in. So
it was the beef is very real there. And you could tell just from the body language that they were kind of giving off, where I noticed from the very start, neither one would really look at each other standing up there, where Larry is kind of looking in one direction, Meg is looking in another, and they don't. I could tell, like, if this isn't one of those, it's a healthy debate, we're both Democrats, we'll both go out for drinks or we'll still work together. No, these two dudes don't like each other. And it was evident. Very
reminded me of the Clinton Trump debate. If you notice, they didn't really talk to each other, which was how we were expecting them to kind of, you know, talk to each other. This was actually the only time that they did talk to each other. When they walked in before the debate began, we were getting all set up and we had our mics on and we were all in our position. You know, Carlos walked in first and then Krasner walked in and he said, Mr. Vega, and he said, Larry, hello, how are you? And that was all they said. The debate started and then, you know, and it happened and they didn't really talk much. I mean, we had to kind of prompt them to respond, although we were expecting for them to talk to each other. And then the only time that they talked to was that exchange that I just read to you. It was, it's really, and I think it falls back to, you know, the lawsuit and what happened and there's bad blood there. And, you know, I think Philadelphia just wants people to come together. I mean, not that you expect two candidates, especially if you're a primary, to come together, but it's just people are just kind of sick and tired of the fighting.
The infighting, the back and forth, the passive
solutions.
The passive aggressive sniping, all of that. And this is clearly a district attorney race that in an off year election that you wouldn't think would be a big deal has really kind of ratcheted up into a huge deal. And I will say, after watching that last night, couldn't be honestly more proud of the both of you for the work you did. Plus, again, shouting out to Lauren Make as well and to Jacqueline London for the work she did moderating that, kind of as an anchor myself. I understand having to be a traffic cop and get that thing through there. And
yeah, and just, you know, trying to figure out the timing, because we had so many more questions about every other, you know, domestic abuse, the sexual violence, juvenile justice, cash bail. We had so many more questions for the lightning round because you can't get to everything. It's only an hour long.
Yeah.
But Jacqueline had to kind of on the fly decide which was the most important, and which, and we all, you know, we all had a say in it, but it was really, I have never worked with a group like this. It was such a powerhouse in just the way that everybody thought and worked together. It's an experience I know I'll never forget, just in leading up to this, because this was hours and hours and hours. It was like a second full-time job just to do this and all the research that we needed to do.
I could tell you put a lot of work in. Both of you did. Cherry's not here for this, but both of you did, along with Lauren and Jacqueline and everybody at KYW News Radio and at NBC 10. And it turned out great. It's just amazing that to hear about the not so nice moments between the two of them, but we got to see it on full display last night. And we want to thank you, Kristen Johansson, our crime and justice reporter here at KYW News Radio, also the host of the Gone Cold podcast as well. Also want to make sure we get that out there too. You can hear that on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Kristen, how can people follow you on social media and keep up with what you're doing?
I'm on Twitter, just at Kristen Johansson, and then on Facebook, Kristen Johansson KYW. And then we have the Gone Cold Facebook group, if anybody is a Gone Cold fan.
That's a lot of great work you do on Gone Cold too. And at some point, would love to talk to you about some of the cases and everything you've covered on there. No, with your schedule, it's so hard to keep up with you. You do great work. And I say that not just having worked with you, but just in general, you do great work here. And thank you so much for taking time from your very busy schedule after a really tough run there, getting this debate together, to come on the Rundown with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I'm J. Scott Smith. I can be reached at J. Scott Smith, J-A-Y-S-C-O, 2 T's, S-M-I-T-H. That's J. Scott Smith on Twitter, on Instagram as well. Real J. Scott Smith on Facebook. You can follow The Rundown on Twitter at The Rundown, P-H-L. You can find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You can also hear me every afternoon on Philadelphia's Afternoon News starting at 3:00. So for Kristen Johansson and for Cherry Gregg, who had to step out, you can follow her at Cherry Gregg, C-H-E-R-R-I, Gregg with 2 G's at the end on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm J. Scott Smith. Thank you for checking out this edition of The Rundown, and we'll be back with another one real soon.